We're learning Megillah Esther. We started talking about the second perek of the Megillah. The second perek of the Megillah is when Ahasuerus starts to seek out a new wife. We made some comments last time. We then transitioned to the part about Mordechai. I just want to make some comments from before, just to fill in a little bit of the story. I made the argument that he's looking for someone. Again, Vashti represented the Babylonian people and their representative in government, and he got rid of her, and now he wants to put it sort of in your face. And he's now he's going to send people out everywhere. He wants everyone to have an opportunity, but it makes him to be more magnanimous. Everyone has the opportunity, but it's involved to let everybody, all of the nations, all of the provinces, have a chelik sort of in the palace. Everyone has the opportunity to send somebody in. There's something even uniquely more of a shtuch to the Babylonians, in as much as when he chooses Esther, so ein Esther magedes moladet haveh esama. We don't know where she's from. Ahasuerus doesn't know where she's from. He knows she's from Shushan. He has no idea if she's Jewish. He doesn't know her people. That's more of a shtuch to the Babylonians. Meaning, Vashti, it pretty much says, I don't need you. Not only do I not need you, I have someone who's from Shushan. I don't really care. It doesn't even matter what her background is. You thought you were so important because you're the Vashti Melech. I got someone who I don't even know where she's from. It's sort of like a point of pride, even, that he managed to find someone. I don't know how much talking they did, but he managed to find someone who he has no idea what her background is. That's like the biggest shtuch to the Babylonians. You're important, but don't go to your head. The queen can be someone who nobody knows anything about. And that's something that makes sense also. Just a couple of other ha'aros just in that perek also that I think I just saw in the Manos Halevi is the Rosh Shlomo Alkabetz. Rosh Shlomo Alkabetz, you have a piece from him there also. He's the author of L'Chadodi and the author of Manos Halevi, and presumably some other things as well. But he's most famous for L'Chadodi, second most famous for the Manos Halevi, and then I don't even know the other stuff that he's famous for, but he was an important person, clearly. And one of the things he does, which is great, is he quotes a lot of the modern, in his time, commentary on the Megillah that we just don't have access to. Rabbi Yehuda ibn Shoshan and these Megillahs and his uncle and his father and this other guy who was around. He just quotes all of these places, and it's really, really... Okay. And it's... Okay. That's all right. No, I got one. So and he quotes all of these other... when he comes back, I'll give it. So he just makes a couple of hours. It's not in the packet. But... And although I take this different approach, that there's this whole political drama going on, from the various midrashim, the various mefarshim, you see that they picked up on things in the text. They picked up on difficulties that they resolved in one way, and they're trying to push their agenda. He has a particular approach to how the Megillah works. But if his diuk is correct, if his reading is correct, then that could work for us as well. We did it last time with the Yaros Dvash. Rav Yonasan Eifetz, who pointed out that the party of Ahasuerus' party was really Belshazzar's yahrzeit. And if it was on Belshazzar's yahrzeit, then he had some cheshbon of why that's important. I had a different cheshbon of why it's important. It doesn't mean the point that it was Belshazzar's yahrzeit is important, and he did one thing with it, I think we can do another. He points out that you see that in the first parak of the Megillah, Ahasuerus consults his advisors twice, two different sets of advisors. And yet here, it's Vayomru Na'arei HaMelech Mesharesav. Right, it's the Na'arei HaMelech who speak up first. It's they're the ones who suggest that he should find a wife, not the various people that we've met in the first parak of the Megillah. That's somewhat strange. If you would have just said, you know, if we wouldn't have had that first parak background, you would have said, okay, the young men, they're the ones who are more interested in marriage, they're the ones who are, you know, more interested in that type of relationship, and so they're the ones who jump to that conclusion, but that would be fine. But in light of the contrast to the first parak, where he's consulting with all of these people all the time, it seems strange that this is not. So he picks up on that point. He picks up on that point, and he quotes two different approaches of why that should be. Rav Yitzchak HaKohen and his father. And he points out he has a different read on it. His read is that Ahasuerus was upset at what they did with Vashti. He's upset about how that turned out, and he thought that maybe the advisors all wanted to get rid of her because they wanted it in. And so he didn't want to use, he was upset at them, and if you read the text, if you look, so this we do have. So this is just the text of the second parak of the Megillah. It says, if you look in the Pasuk Beis, find a good-looking girl, right? In Pasuk Dalid, Whoever you see fit, you choose. Rishlom Algebetz reads into that, that don't consult anybody, you can't trust them. Whoever you think is best, you show them who's boss. Meaning you show them who's boss, and that's very tough, b'nei ha-melech, don't consult anybody. And he says the first time is the Na'arim can only say it because the advisors, although they think it's a good idea, can't say it because they're not trusted, and therefore, it's the Na'arim who say it. But I think that the Diuk seems correct, meaning he's not consulting with anybody, it's Vayitav b'nei ha-melech. I think you can read it within the framework that I'm developing, is that, yeah, he wants this to be open to everybody. The whole point is that it's not specifically the Babylonians. It's not the Bavlim who he tried to court as a political relationship by marrying Vashti, the daughter of Belshazzar. It's not that. It's anybody at all. Aseri tav b'nei ha-melech, whoever you seem to be fit, you'll choose whoever you want to create your political alliances with as you see. And that's how he reads... Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Kohen is not actually saying that, but I think he's correct. His father... with Abba Marizal, so he says, well, you're not going to find anyone who, he reads it a little bit differently, each one of these has a little different take on the Megillah. It would be fascinating for someone to go through all of the different opinions quoted in the Manos HaLevi and try to put them all together and be like, oh, this was his father's approach to the Megillah. I don't think anyone's done that. He says, well, Vashti was so wonderful and so great, she's a Bas Malachim, you're never going to find anyone who could compete in that regard. You're never going to find anyone so illustrious with such a background, with such a yichus, so don't even bother trying. Don't even bother trying to find, just go for whatever you want. Since you can't, you know, if there's no yichus, you may as well just go after what the heart desires. And so that's why they push for it. Again, I think the reading in the Megillah is clearly that Vashti was a woman with yichus, Vashti was someone important, and now he's choosing something different than that. Now the question is why? So, Rav Alkabetz is, I guess he's also Rav Alkabetz. Or Shlomo Alkabetz's father is suggesting it's because he figured if he can't get this great yichus, he may as well go in, don't even bother trying, you're not even going to get close, he'll just be disappointed. You could also read it as, no, she was a person of that great stature, now he's moving away from that, he's going to adopt a different model to try to have everyone have a sense of that they have a part in the palace. But I think the reading is correct, and you see a lot of that, or maybe I see a lot of that because I'm biased in how I read the Megillah, so if you ever think it's wrong, please point it out. But a lot of these diukim in the text, I think, they're all pointing out that there's an ambiguity here. There's something strange happening. There's something odd, and therefore, we need to point it out and then explain why it's so. The pointing it out, that's a fact. Well, explaining why it's so, those are different opinions. So I think a lot of these pointing out why it's true, what is going on, is interesting. So last time we started, so that was a little bit of just stuff to fill in blanks. Last time we started with the introduction to Mordechai. The introduction to Mordechai is again in Pasuk Hey. Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shoshana Bira, Ushmo Mordechai Ben Yair Ben Shim'i Ben Kish Ish Yemini. There was an Ish Yehudi in Shushan, Mordechai, the son of Yair, the son of Shim'i, the son of Kish Ish Yemini. It's our practice that this is one of the Pesukei Geula. We read this all out loud when it comes to Purim. This is like, this is a big deal, identifying who Mordechai was. I apologize. Happens to be very good. Okay. And then we get some background on who he is. Asher Hegla Mirushalayim, Im Hagla Asher Haglasa, Im Yechonya Melech Yehuda, Asher Hegla Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel, or Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel, if you're lenient. So he was from the Golos Yechonya from the time of Nebuchadnezzar. They're giving us a little bit of background. He left from Nebuchadnezzar, which, again, seems a little bit extraneous. Asher Hagla Mirushalayim. Why do I care who was Megala then? Do I care who Nebuchadnezzar was that was destroyed the Beit HaMikdash? Not relevant. Asher Hagla Mirushalayim. Im Hagola Asher Hagasa Im Yechonya Melech Yehuda. That's an important fact because it tells you who they were. Because the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash was when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, so it happened. But the Golos happened in several stages. Golos Yechonya happened before the actual destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And that was the more aristocratic people, the leaders. So now we know who Mordechai is. That's an important fact, to know who Mordechai is in the Jewish world. In the Jewish world, Mordechai is an important person, so much so that he was in the Golos of Yechonya, which was all the aristocracy, the leadership of the time. So that's an important fact. Why do you need to know Asher Hegla Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel? Okay, I mean, who else did the Golos? Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel. Maybe it's cluing us into he's aware of the whole politics here. because this is a story that's happening in Shushan, Avira. This is a story with Achashveiros, who's the Melech of Paras. And this is the Nebuchadnezzar, Melech of Babel, and yet we're still stuck in Paras, so you have to think to yourself, well, meaning as the reader, you're thinking, okay, Mordechai was Megillagan. What do you want me to think? Realize, hey, wait a minute. Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, now we're in Paras, what exactly happened? It's cluing us in at least to think along the lines of something's happening, just in world history, that the Bavlim gave up the power to the Parsim, something to be aware of, and in light of the way we were reading the first parak, so it just brings that to the fore. Now, we pointed out last time also, Ben Yari, Ben Shimi, Ben Kish, there's a machlokas, are those actually his father, grandfather, and great-grandfather, or not? Mordechai only appears twice in Tanakh, once here and once in Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah, which is around the same time as one of the people who went to help build the Beit HaMikdash, and now he's back. Interesting, if he's one of the leaders of the Jewish people, it made sense that he went back to Yerushalayim to rebuild, and then we know that Achashveiros stopped the rebuilding, so maybe he's now back in Shushan. It's unclear a little bit. Could be that it was just a popular name at the time. Could be. This is the second Beit HaMikdash. So it sounds like he went with the first time. He went with Ezra and Nehemiah the first time. He's there. He reads Sefer Ezra, and it says he's there. It doesn't say he's there. It says there's a man there named Mordechai Bilshan. Now, that's the only other time that the name Mordechai appears in Tanakh. So we have a theory of conservation of characters in Tanakh. Chazal likes to assume if his name appears once, if it's only twice, it's the same person. So if it is, it sounds like he was there, which makes sense, if he's a leader of the Jewish people. And maybe, if he's such a leader of the Jewish people, when Achashverosh stopped the building of the Beit HaMikdash, he went back to Shushan to see what he could do about it. You have to read some, if you're assuming he's the same person, you have to explain what he's doing in both places at the same time. But that highlights something even more. So we know, after this story, right? It's not here. Okay? No, it is at the very end of the parak. The very end, after Esther is chosen, we'll get back to the choosing. We'll get back to Mordechai. We know at the very end, Pasuk Kabbalah, Vayamim Ahem Mordechai Yosef Vishar HaMelech Katzaf Bigtan Vateresh Shnei Tzari Say HaMelech Mishomri Asaf Vayvakshu Lishloach Yad HaMelech HaChashverosh Bigtan and Teresh have an assassination plot against the king. And Vayivada Adavar LaMordechai, Mordechai finds out, Vayagad LaEsther HaMalka Vatomer Esther LaMelech B'Sei Mordechai. He tells Esther, and Esther tells the king in the name of Mordechai, Vayivukash Adavar V'Yimatzei Vaytalu Shteim Al'Eitz Vaykadev V'Sei V'Divrei Amim L'Sei HaMelech. They investigate, they find it's true. They hang Bigtan and Teresh, and they write, they record that Mordechai did this. So first of all, points out that this assassination plot shouldn't come as a shock if we realize that there's a lot of political upheaval going on in Shushan at the time. Perhaps even the selection of Esther was really the straw that broke the camel's back for the Bavlim, meaning the Babylonians in Shushan at the time. This is like really horrible. You had the queen, you had the princess, the daughter of Belshazzar, and now you have this person, nobody, she's nothing, who is she? No one cares. And Achashverosh makes this whole big party for her. That's really too much for the Babylonians to handle, so maybe that's what led to the assassination plot. I don't know. But maybe it's just the general friction political climate in Shushan that led to the assassination plot. But fine, the assassination plot, which sort of fits into the whole story of there being political turmoil. I'm not saying that assassination is always the solution to political turmoil, but it fits in with the story. Mordechai finds out. Now, Mordechai is under no obligation to tell Achashverosh. Certainly, if the assassination plot works, then even if they found out that he knew, nothing's going to happen because Achashverosh would be dead. The only reason that Mordechai would be worried is if it didn't work out and then Achashverosh would know, hey, but you knew. I don't think that's the cheshbon that he had. Why did Mordechai actually get involved? And think about it for a moment. Mordechai's association with Achashverosh up until this point is really, 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 really bad. Meaning, Achashverosh just stopped the building of the Beit HaMikdash. If we assume that it's the same Mordechai in the Megillah who was in Yerushalayim, so he was in Yerushalayim, went back to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, Achashverosh stopped it, and now he's in Shushan to rebuild it. You know, before Achashverosh was this guy Koresh, and Koresh was a lot better than the Jewish people, and Achashverosh is more politically motivated, and he's stopping the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Maybe, don't know, Mordechai thought to himself, you know, I'm certainly not going to kill the king, God forbid. That's awesome. But if there's a problem, they want to kill the king, who am I to get in their way? Who am I to get in their way? I'm not going to do that. That's crazy. Let it happen. Worst things have happened, meaning the Babylonian kings and the Persian kings, they get killed. This is something that we're familiar with, right? Belshazzar gets killed. This is how the whole story happened, that Belshazzar was killed by Dariush Hamadi, and that's how the empire switched from the Babylonians to the Persians, because he was killed.
He might have pleased Esther as well.
So, what if it happened to Esther? So he might be worried about Esther. Okay. He might, so Mordechai may not, so that's a good point. Mordechai may not want this, look, this would be a coup. This would be a coup if Bigdad and Teresh killed the king. What would happen to Esther? So Mordechai's nervous. So that's probably, in all honesty, I haven't thought about it, that's probably the reason why he got involved. But Ahasuerus doesn't know that. Because remember, Ahasuerus has no idea, even though Esther, Vatomer Esther Lamelech Vashem Mordechai, she doesn't say, Mordechai, my uncle slash husband, right? She doesn't say that. She just says, oh, this is the guy Mordechai who did this.
After Gaul's fall, do we know anything about the Jewish migration to Persia, the character, nature, the community?
Well, we know that very few people moved back to Israel.
Yes.
We know very few people moved back to Israel. That we know. And Mordechai is only among them.
To
Babel to... No, it's really Persia now, but Persia to Israel. Oh, that I don't know. I'm not familiar. Oh, we might. I don't. The information might be out there. Of how they got the Shushan, I don't know. We know there are Jews in Shushan because it says, later the Megillah refers to HaYehudim HaSher Shushan. We'll get to that in a moment, because it's not in a moment, but soon, because it's relevant to the point. So yeah, we believe that, there is some. There's a city in Iran called Sus, which they believe is Shushan. The challenge to that is, I think that's based on archaeological evidence, is that the Jewish community of Paras of Iran has a tradition that the kever of Mordechai and Esther is in a city called Hamadan, which is not Shushan. Yeah, they have a video. They go there they read the Megillah there. They do Tanis Esther there. They let students for the video for the PR for the Iranian government to show how great they are to the Jews. They're not. But fine. But it's not in the same city that we think is Shushan. So
Maybe they didn't get buried in the actual city.
Yeah, but it's really far. It's not close. It's not close. I mean, today it's close, but it's not close. It seems strange that they would bury... I don't know. Could be. Don't know. So Mordechai has an interest in stopping this coup, maybe even just to protect Esther. But Ahasuerus knows nothing about that. From Ahasuerus' perspective, he knows his political turmoil in the country. He knows there was this whole thing with Vashti and the Babylonians, and he selected Esther. There was just an assassination plot on his life. And then this Jew comes along and saves his life. A Jew who has no reason to care about the king's life. A Jew who, it says, Ish Yehudi Haya B'Shushan Avira, meaning Mordechai is identifiable as a Jew, whereas Esther is clearly not. Esther is not identifiable as a Jew, which is why she manages to keep that a secret. Mordechai is Ish Yehudi. He's identified as the Jew of Shushan, and he's clearly Jewish. And he comes and he saves the king. He is presumably someone of stature in Shushan. Ahasuerus may have even known that Mordechai is someone who traveled to Jerusalem. Because if he came back to Shushan to try to plead with the king, he's probably a person of some prominence that the king may have come across. He has no reason to care that Ahasuerus lives. I mean, we know because of Esther, maybe. But from Ahasuerus' perspective, and now he establishes himself as, I'm a loyalist to the king. Now, Mordechai may realize all of this has been, but Ahasuerus has no idea. But in this story, by Mordechai telling Ahasuerus, right, informing him, Mordechai establishes himself as a loyalist. Meaning, whereas the Bavlim, the Goyim, are opposed, the political rivals, Mordechai is now a loyalist to the king, which is going to play in a little bit later, very importantly. But in this very story, Mordechai has, from Ahasuerus' perspective, has absolutely no reason to save the king's life other than, well, he must like me very much. He must be pro this Persian government. Maybe progressive, maybe Democrat, whatever it is. Whatever it is, he is very pro Ahasuerus, and he comes across as someone who is a loyalist to him. And that's an important point to figure out. So when the Megillah tells us originally, Asher Heglad Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel, and it's reminding us, hey, think about the political events that happened, because now he's in Paras, he's in Shushan, and then Mordechai goes and saves Ahasuerus, Melech Paras. It says something about the unspoken, but the Ahasuerus-Mordechai relationship. He knows he's a loyalist to him. Now, Mordechai doesn't play a role in Ahasuerus' life at all until much, 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 much later. But when he does, it's this very scene that's remembered, right? Ahasuerus has nothing to do with Mordechai until later there's a fateful night where he's reading from the book and someone saved my life. And it was Mordechai, and I'll argue that it's important because he identifies Mordechai as a loyalist. And it's important. That's the only association he has with Mordechai. Mordechai's a loyal guy. You're right. Beit HaMikdash maybe. I don't know. But he's a loyalist. He likes me. Yeah.
Was it Mordechai who told Ahasuerus about this, or was it
It was Esther, but it says, Vatomer Esther Lamelech B'Sei Mordechai. The Megillah is clear that she mentions it, that Mordechai was the one who...
Right. But we're not talking here about Mordechai having an interface with
you. Maybe not a direct, like, face-to-face, but... So no, so my argument was, if it's the same Mordechai in the Megillah as it was in, and say for Ezra, who was in Yerushalayim, who went back as the leader of the people, if he came back to Shushan now, he must have come back for a reason. I mean, you don't see anybody else coming back. They seem, there's not a big community there. There's a whole, say for Ezra and the Chemi, they're defending themselves like, mamish, like day to day, they're being attacked. It seems like, if he is a leader of the people, clearly in Megillah Esther, because eventually he's going to tell everybody to fast and everybody fasts. I would argue that if I went around Boca Raton and told people to fast, nobody's really listening to me. But Mordechai went around and people listened. People responded. So apparently he was a leader. So if so, I'm putting a lot of pieces together. If all of these things, and he came back to plead with Ahasuerus or something, it could be that he knew who he was. That, and he's clearly Jewish. And he's clearly a loyalist. So fine, he puts him in the checkbox of a loyalist Jew. That's all I need for this point. Just he's a loyalist Jew. Whether he knows who he is, he can identify him, is irrelevant. He knows that Mordechai, this guy, a Yehudi, is a loyalist.
Wouldn't they have known that he's a member of the Sanhedrin?
Would Ahasuerus have known? You're correct. So we know that Mordechai is a member of the Sanhedrin, but all of the Sanhedrin, and so the Jews listen to him, which is, it's not in the Megillah. Meaning I'm trying to find proof in the Megillah, in the text. In the text, he clearly, when he says fast, they fast. Now, yes, he's a member of Sanhedrin, so that's why they listen to him, but at least from the text itself, you see him being a leader, and you see it working out, meaning in the end of the day, they listened to him. Yeah. He raised the king raised that. Well, that's later, so that could be that a result of the story, but yeah.
The members have the truth, I think, from your point of view of politics. And Godard, the world, and Mordechai, the Agadah, how did he find out? Because he knew the languages.
Because he knew much of the languages, right.
The people of this country, so he wanted to...
Right, so he was very involved. Correct. Correct. Okay. So, correct. So that was for Mordechai being Jewish and why it's relevant. We'll have a few minutes. But if you look, what about this Ish Yehudi and Ish Yemini? So if you look, there's a couple of pages here from the Manas Halevi. So what does it mean, Ish Yehudi and Ish Yemini? So he says Yehudi means from Yehuda, or maybe not from Yehuda. There are three options of what Ish Yehudi means. And the Manas Halevi, he's very, very wordy. It's like very long. He just says things very... It takes him a long time to say things. So, Rosom Al-Sabeth. And then there's two perushim on the bottom. Because he's so wordy, so the guy in the bottom, the Brichei Sharaich, just gives you like, here's what he said. Okay, it's helpful. Okay, because sometimes you can get lost. He said, look, Ish Yehudi can be, he's Jewish. Ish Yehudi could be, he's from Yehuda. Or Ish Yehudi could be something unique about him. He is unique as opposed to the other Jews. He is an Ish Yehudi. He's identified as a Yehudi uniquely. And maybe everybody else is something different. We'll see why in a moment. It's important that there are only two people identified as an Ish. Ish Yehudi and Ish Tzar V'Oyev. Haman and Mordechai. It's a rivalry that they seem to have throughout the Megillah. One of the Midrashim picks up on that point. So he says, it's very strange, this whole, wait a minute. They say, so the Gemara says, well, Ish Yehudi, Ish Yemini, his father's from Yehuda, his mother's from Binyamin. When did we do that ever? It's a din. The halacha is, your shevet follows your father. Judaism follows the mother. Rav Schechter was here, has a whole mahalach on this. Yeah. Oh, so Rav Schechter has a whole mahalach on this, that mishpacha goes by the father, and then agoi goes by the mother. He has a whole piece on this, but why this whole thing is a little bit strange. So he says, no. He thinks he's Yehudi. He thinks, Rav Shlomo Algabetz is going to argue, he's not from Yehuda. He's Ish Yemini. He's from Binyamin. And that's why Kish, right, Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish, Kish is not his great-grandfather. Kish is Shaul HaMelech's father, and it's tracing him all the way back, to create a rivalry between Mordechai and Haman, just like Stroll and Agag Melech Amalek. When we get to the introduction of Haman, so we'll get to that. He says he's a Binyamin, and he's from Binyamin, and Shaul HaMelech is from Binyamin, so it works out. So what is Yehudi? So there's a little bit of a challenge in this whole story. Now, it's not in the Megillah. So the Gemara wants to know, you know, what did the Jews deserve to be killed at that time? Or at least they weren't killed in the end. To have the Gezerah put upon them. So there's two reasons that are given. There are two reasons, two general reasons that are given. The more famous one is Shenanu Misudasa Shalosa Rasha, that they participated in Achashverosh's meal. Okay, I'm not saying that's a good thing. Not good, but okay, could be. Yeah, okay, but maybe they're okay. Stay there. Chazal said it. But there's another reason. Shenishtachavu Letzelem Shel Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar many years ago made this big pesel and he wanted everybody to bow down. And there's actually two opinions in the Gemara whether the Jews bowed down or not. Maybe they bowed down, maybe they didn't. It's a machlokas in the Gemara, maybe they bowed down, maybe they didn't. So maybe Mordechai is the Ish Yehudi because one of the Al-Sheikh actually thinks it's both reasons. He has a whole reading in the Gemara that it's both reasons. Now neither of which appears in the Megillah. None of this is in the Megillah. So you have to find, well, we're not going to have time today, but where did Chazal get this from? Like, that was just a Masorah, that's how it happened. But I can argue that, no, you can actually see hints in the Megillah for both of those opinions. You can actually see hints that that's what happened. But maybe Mordechai is, he's Ish Yehudi. He didn't bow down, he didn't participate in the Seudah. He is unique, he didn't do any of those things. It's a different Medrash, meaning when it comes to the lines in Chazal about the Megillah, so there are different approaches. But this approach would seem to indicate, no, your Soma Algebet is going with the approach of no. He has a whole Medrash, we're not going to see it today. But he has a whole Medrash that argues that no, that Mordechai did not participate, but more than does not participate. He was the one who stood up and tried to give people Musar, and he was the one who stood up as a leader. Again, if you buy the fact that he's a leader of Jewish people, it fits in better. Right? He tells them, like the Gemara says, he's a member of Sanhedrin. But when he tells people to fast, they fast. If he went to Jerusalem and he came back to petition with Achashverosh to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, that's what happened. But Mordechai stood, he's the Ish Yehudi. At the time, one Ish Yehudi, that was Mordechai. It's Roi that it should come through him, which may be one signal that, well, if it's one, so everybody else, we know there are Yehudim Asher B'Shushan. There are other Jews in Shushan. If we're calling him an Ish Yehudi, it must be that other people's actions are not so great. If you take a look, it's not here. But the Gemara says, why Yair, why Shimi, Shehirat Eine Yisrael, that Hashem was Shomea Esfilato, or he was making on Dalte Beis HaMedrash to get people to fast, that he was instrumental in, we're not going to have to stop, but in the end, when Esther goes to Achashverosh and she has to convince everybody to fast, the Targum Sheni, discuss next time, the Targum Sheni says that it wasn't just fasting, it was this mass tshuva movement. It was a mass tshuva movement, and he really got all the Jews in Shushan really excited about it, and that's his history. That the Gemara is darshaning, Ben Yari, Ben Shimi, Ben Kishi, Shimimi, each one of those is an aspect where he got everybody excited to do tshuva, and that's why it's Roya, through him, this story should occur. So it's relevant that maybe that's why we all, it's one of the psukim of Geula. There's no Geula in that pasuk. Ish Yehudi, Yari, Ben Shushan, Abiris, Memorial. It's introducing a character. We need the character. We need to know who he is. We need to know why he is, but all of those introductory phrases, Yehudi, Ben Shimi, Ben Kishi, Shimini, are trying to show why the Geula should have come through him, why he's right to do so. Bezras Hashem, next week we'll see some of the other pieces, the proofs for some of this.